In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Whenever you have a chance to make an impact, do it. We're about to see that with this upcoming special session to try to ram through a massive tax increase to fund ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation, which is already funded, but Democrats decided it needs even more. And there will be threats. It passes, or the governor will throw a hissy fit and start firing people to make you feel bad that you're not paying even more for government than you already are. And to drive home the point, she won't fire the people responsible for budget overruns and the overspending. No, she will fire the everyday run-of-the-mill workers who are just trying to do their job. But thanks to email and online legislative forums and phones when neither of those work, taking action and taking a stand can take as little as just a couple of minutes. People often think their voice doesn't matter. Will it really matter if I take the time to contact my legislators? That doubt is understandable, but it's the same kind of misguided mindset when people say my vote doesn't really matter. And that can be true in a sense, but you're thinking about it wrong. Mathematically speaking, individually, your vote matters very little. Because that mindset sees one fewer vote in a million votes doesn't really matter. Where your individual vote and voice do matter is that it's part of the larger total. And public input does matter. For one, it gives legislators an idea of how people in their district might vote if they vote to support a bad bill that has people upset. Your input also matters in such things as public meeting laws. Did you know that if the public is able to show they do not support a program that the state is trying to push through, the state won't do it? In short, when it comes to public meetings, if they cannot show that there is public support for doing whatever it is they're trying to do, then they won't proceed. I've personally been a part of that. Years ago, a school district in Astoria wanted to shove through a Planned Parenthood-staffed school-based health center, and because there was enough outcry from the public, they didn't proceed. Your voice does matter. It never hurts to speak up. It does hurt if you stay silent. I'd like to welcome Alex Carlatos back to the show. The last time we talked, he was running for Congressional District 4 over in the southwest of Oregon, but after a couple of attempts, he decided to run for state legislature instead, and he won his seat, House District 4. Alex is an Oregon Army National Guard veteran and small business owner, and if that name rings a bell and you can't quite figure out why, you might remember that he and two others stomped an ISIS terrorist on a passenger train bound for Paris that was later made into a movie directed by Clint Eastwood, and he also had an appearance on Dancing with Stars, taking third place. Alec, you have a very unique and interesting career to get where you are today, and it is great to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we wanted to have you on to talk about this special session the governor has called to raise taxes to give ODOT a huge funding increase. So let's quickly hit some key points in this first segment about all that, and then I'd like to get some insights into the whole legislative process and what you've personally seen as a freshman representative, especially in terms of the ODOT funding and the arguments around that. And then we'll get more in-depth into this special session and ODOT later. So just a quick review for our listeners. HB 2025 in its initial form would have been the largest tax increase in Oregon history. That version went down in flames. HB 2025 version 2.0 got a few tweaks and left out some taxes, but was still going to be a massive tax increase on Oregonians and Oregon businesses, and that also failed, despite picking up at least one Republican supporter from Kevin Mannix, who switched his vote under somewhat suspicious circumstances, but we'll leave that aside. But HB 2025 version 2.0 also went down because Democrats did not support it. The session ended, and now Democrat Governor Tina Kotek has called a special session to try to pass more funding and tax increases for ODOT. So that special session to ram through those new ODOT taxes is Friday, August 29th, and they are taking public comment on Monday, August 25th, this coming Monday. So has anyone seen the actual bill yet?
No, and even if they have, there's absolutely no guarantee that that's going to be in its final form. And that's kind of the problem, is they're doing everything more or less in secrecy. It's just kind of the Democrat leadership that are batting around what the bill is actually going to look like. And then they'll basically make it public to their members and make sure that they have a vote count. And then if they need to change anything to get their members to vote for it, they will, or try to poach, God forbid, a Republican to vote yes on it. And I hope that doesn't happen, but we'll see.
So I know you're new to the legislature, but you've certainly watched it from the outside for many years. I can't think of any bills that are worked on in secret that end up being good bills. Can you think of any?
Absolutely not. I just, you know, that's not how the legislative process should go.
No.
And I think the real issue here is that Democrats in the state of Oregon are really controlled by the public sector unions.
Yes.
And that was kind of the problem with the first version of the bill, is they needed to make it big enough to keep the unions happy. But as a result, they made it so big that it turned off even a couple Democrats,
yeah,
like Mark Meek. And I think that that's kind of the issue that they're having this time around as well. They're trying to find the right balance to give enough money to the unions while at the same time not making it the largest tax increase in history so that they don't lose some of their Democrat, more moderate members.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the largest tax increase in history, but this is something that would apply to everybody. You know, if you buy something, it arrived on a truck, there's car registration fees and taxes, and Democrats, if they're the only ones voting for it, they would definitely bear the blame. So just to remind people what Oregonians are up against here, most bills pass with a simple majority. That's all you need is 50% plus one there. But in Oregon, for tax increases, it can't be a simple majority. It has to be a 3/5 majority, and that's 60%. Democrats have these current supermajorities in both the House and the Senate, so they don't need any Republican votes. So I think this notion that this massive tax increase was going to apply to everybody, is that why it was making so many Democrats a little squishy on this?
Yes. I mean, and to be fair, it was the Democrats that are in swing districts. They know that this is not a popular bill because, you know, it's going to affect really the working class and poor people the most because, you know, if you talk about adding 6 cents a gallon in the gas tax and more increases over the course of a decade, wealthy people aren't going to care about paying a few cents more in gas, but it's death by a thousand cuts. Also, registration fees in that original bill were going to go up dramatically.
Right.
It's just not popular. I mean, people don't feel like they're getting their money's worth from ODOT already. I'm sure you guys have been tracking the various scandals that ODOT's gone through, the budget overruns.
Oh, yes.
It's a mess. And you're asking, instead of this bloated government agency facing accountability, you're just asking the taxpayers to make up the difference. And again, even some Democrats realize that that's a bad idea. And you talk about the 3/5 majority to pass it. That's if every Democrat shows up. If, you know, they have some Democrats with medical problems, just because it's summer, one or two might be gone on vacation. So for every Democrat that's missing, it means they need to pick up a Republican vote. So I think first things first, we need to make sure that all of our Republicans hold strong and vote no. And I'm not even sure if that's guaranteed.
Yeah. Well, speaking of potential Republican votes, you know, Democrats love to talk about how this bill or that bill had bipartisan support. And during HB 2025 version 1.0, Republicans came up with a solution that would not have required any new tax increases to fund ODOT. Instead, it forced ODOT to better prioritize and use the money they currently have. So why did Democrats refuse to support that? Because it would have solved the funding problem, but instead they insist that any new solutions have to involve more money.
Because it would have involved cutting employees, moving employees around, actual budgeting solutions for ODOT. And again, the Democrats are really controlled by the public sector unions, so they're not going to cut any union employees, even if it's popular and makes perfect sense. They're going to, you know, threaten to cut maintenance workers because they know that's going to scare a lot of people into voting for the bill. And it, again, it's more money going to ODOT, increases the amount of employees, which increases the amount of union dues going to public sector unions, so that then those public sector unions can spend on Democrat politicians to help them get elected, so that then they're accountable to the unions once they are elected and the cycle repeats itself.
Yeah. So let's go and take a break there. Coming up, we're going to take a little bit of a break from ODOT before we get back to that. Coming up, though, we're going to talk about what it's like to see all of this craziness up close and personal. from a freshman representative, Alex Garlato. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, and I'm your host, Mark Anderson. I'm talking today to Representative Alex Garlatos, and it's fun to say that because we first got to know Alec back when he was running for Congress in CD4 and definitely should have won that. But in 2024, he got elected to Oregon's House of Representatives in HD4, and we are happy and proud that he won, bringing a needed voice of common sense from Southern Oregon. Alec is also a small business owner and an Oregon Army National Guard veteran. And speaking of that, you have an important anniversary today, as it turns out.
Yeah, today, at least as we're recording this, is the 10-year anniversary of our terrorist attack that we survived in France.
That's got to be almost surreal to look back and remember all of that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely been the fastest decade of my life.
Yes, you've had a very interesting career, as we discussed in that last segment there. So before we get back to ODOT and the special session that's been called, you know, we followed your career, you know, like I said, back when you were running for CD4. And haven't really talked with you much since you actually won your seat there in the House of Representatives. How has being elected, how has that differed from what you expected going in versus what you have actually experienced so far?
It's actually pretty fascinating. I had a pretty good idea of how politics worked just from all the stuff that I saw while I was running for Congress. It's not the same as actually doing the job, but I had a pretty good idea of what to expect. The only difference was I got there and, you know, I thought, okay, now I'm elected. I'll see how the sausage is actually made. Maybe I'll become a little bit more moderate because that is what tends to happen to people once they get elected. And honestly, after getting there and seeing everything that goes on behind the scenes, it's made me more radical. I mean, it's really disturbing to see people, you know, mostly Democrats, but you know, some Republicans that will be like, oh, I didn't want to vote yes on that bill, but I had to for X, Y, or Z reason. And, it, you know, these people aren't even, they're not even voting how they want to vote. They're voting for some outside interest group or because the party pressured them or whatever. And it's just fascinating to see because it's not what the average person would actually think happens. And it's a little depressing, but like I said, yes, it's just made me more radical. It hasn't made me more moderate and want to work across the aisles to get legislation passed. It's just made me more angry.
Sure. Well, I would think that would anger anybody going in there because you expect people to hold to their principles. And if they're switching their votes simply because some outside group is pressuring them and it violates their principles, that would, I would be right there with you. I'd definitely be more radical as well. So as far as being a freshman, you're more whip-y than whip-er. So what kinds of pressure, if any, do you face from the Republicans?
Well, that's kind of, I think, part of why Republicans tend to lose a lot. Not really, I don't mean politically on like the campaign side. I just mean politically inside the legislature. Is it's really hard for us to unite on anything because Republicans are a little bit more free-spirited and free-thinking. And because we're not the party in power, there's nothing really our side can do as far as threatening members, to put it bluntly, like the Democrats do, to keep our people in line. You know, we don't have control over committees. Our leader can't kick people off of committees if they don't hold together for a vote, you know, to stop some terrible Democrat tax increase. We don't have any one funding source which can cut funding or put money behind a primary opponent if a Republican breaks ranks to vote for a tax increase or something like that. So there's really nothing keeping Republican representatives accountable to their base. So you'll see a lot of them just kind of go their own way and do their own thing. And again, normally I don't mind that. That's why I like being a Republican. It's also a good thing, you know, on the other side of the argument. But at the end of the day, if it means that we'll always lose one or two Republicans and to vote with the Democrats so that they can call a bill bipartisan, it's just depressing to watch because these are like, you know, tax increases. These are things that every Republican should align on, whether you're a moderate Republican, a libertarian Republican, a conservative Republican. It shouldn't matter. We should all be at least against massive tax increases for extremely bloated agencies that aren't held accountable.
Yeah.
And so it's stuff like that. It's tough to watch. And that's something I think we need to do better as Republicans, because that's not even, we can't blame the Democrats for that one. That's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah. Well, your experiences really, I think, resemble a lot of what I've certainly observed over the years, where, you know, Democrats tend to be more in lockstep and Republicans tend to be more independent minded thinking. And I think that's true of Republican voters versus Democrat voters as well. You know, but I think that's the way government is supposed to not function, actually. It's not supposed to be easy to pass bills. And so I like the fact that Republicans don't always march in lockstep. I think that's great. But you mentioned that some people, threatening members and that sort of thing. Do you have any insights in terms of the types of threats that Democrats get?
Oh, I mean, it's some of the stuff of what I already mentioned. The unions will threaten to pull their funding, or the party or the union will threaten to find a primary opponent to run against them. It's just also, I mean, they'll get kicked off of their committees. We know that that happens. That's happened a couple times this last session.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you, your committee is kind of what gives you power inside the building, because it influences what bills actually come to the floor. And especially if you're like a chairman of a committee, it gives you even more power. And so threatening to boot someone off of their committee, not only does it hurt your constituents, but it hurts your political career inside the building. And so that's kind of the first step. And, you know, we saw people get booted off their committee.
Yes.
For opposing the transportation package.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just stuff like that. Yeah. And it unfortunately works on most of them.
So as far as dealing with public input, what has that been like? And do you tend to get more complaints or more praise for what you did?
Mostly complaints. You know, people write their representative when something's wrong, or they're angry about something, or they think we're going to pass a bill that they don't want to see passed. You know, especially this last session, there was a huge uproar over the fire map that got passed last legislative session. And so we made basically a fix for that this session. But before that fix got put in place, it was a huge point of contention between the Republicans and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And everyone across the board, Republican and Democrat, was upset about it. And so there was a lot of pressure on us to find a fix and fast. But of course, you know, when it comes to party politics, even though the Democrats were the ones that passed this terrible piece of legislation, they also wanted credit for fixing it, and they didn't want to give Republicans the victory for having a common sense bill that actually fixed it. So they basically just took a lot of the Republican ideas, put a Democrat label on it, and then passed the bill. And, you know, we as Republicans voted for it because it was a good bill, because they basically just co-opted ours. But, you know, they took the win for it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that kind of stuff would drive me nuts. Okay, so let's take a break. Up next, we're going to dive back into ODOT and give you a little more insight into what's going on with ODOT and the upcoming special session, where Democrats want to go full steam ahead on tax increases because I guess Oregonians aren't taxed enough already. And welcome back. We're talking today to Representative Alex Skarlatos. He's from State House District 4. That's in Southwest Oregon. And he's an Oregon Army National Guard veteran and small business owner. You probably know him from the Clint Eastwood film. You know, the name of that escapes me, though, but it's where you guys had stopped a terrorist attack on a passenger train bound for Paris. What was the name of that one again?
Oh, the 1517 to Paris.
Yes.
Everyone forgets it because it's just numbers.
Yeah. Well, I knew Paris was in it somehow, but I couldn't make the rest of it fit. So before we get on to ODOT, you know, during the break there, I got thinking about some of the things you said. Just do a little pickup questions here. As far as the threats and stuff that especially Democrats face, I guess the more I thought about that, I'm thinking, why cave? You know, why not stand up for what you believe in, even if it costs you your job? It seems you need to take a stand for what you honestly believe in.
Well, I think that's the problem. At the end of the day, they want their job more. I mean, they get threatened to get kicked off at committees. They get threatened to be primaried. It's the consequences are real on the Democrat side because they're the majority party, right? But at the end of the day, you have to realize you're a state representative. You're there to represent your constituents. If that means you lose your next election or you get primaried by the public sector unions, I mean, it's the price you got to pay. I mean, I think that's, I think, I know it's kind of a controversial strategy, and we shouldn't use it all the time. But I think every Republican that gets elected should be at least prepared to walk if a piece of legislation is bad enough, even though it means they won't get reelected because of that stupid bill that we passed a couple of years ago. And so I just think that you should put your job ahead of your personal political career, because that's why you got sent there. And I think that should be a litmus test for everyone, because you're not willing to sacrifice your job to do what you're there to do, you shouldn't be there in the first place.
Exactly. And you know that personally as a member of the Army, is that, you know, you were willing to put your life on the line. This is a job. I mean, that's pretty small in comparison. So you definitely need to stand up for what you believe. And I would hope as an elected representative that all of them would do that. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. So, you know, we really want people to weigh in on HB 2025, which is the focus of this special session here with ODOT funding. We know that a tremendous amount of public input helped derail HB 2025 the first time around. So getting back to dealing with public input as a representative, what did you find, or what would you recommend is the best way for people to weigh in on things like this, whether it's to the representative or to give public testimony? What worked, especially as far as you were concerned, that you felt really connected to people?
Well, I think the best strategy for reaching out to a representative, at least on this bill, is find the moderate ones in both parties, the moderate Republicans that might get pressured to vote yes on it, and the moderate Democrats that already want to vote no but might get pressured to vote yes on it. Reach out to them. I mean, the solid Republicans are already going to vote no, but a lot of the moderates, I don't want to name names, but a lot of the moderates need some pressure in both parties. And so reach out to them. Don't use like the boilerplate emails that, you know, people prepare and then you just copy and paste and hit send. Once we see more than one of the same email, we just kind of ignore them. Write something that's actually from the heart. Don't make it too long, you know, maybe just three or four sentences, and just make it personal and tell them why you specifically don't want this package to go through, and address it to those more moderate members.
In terms of contacting you, do you guys prefer email? Are phones okay? What are your thoughts on that?
Email is usually the best, because with phones, typically the representatives don't answer their own phones. And we usually have time when we're on the floor to check our emails. And even if we're just skimming through them, we'll still see the title of the email and the first sentence about what bill they're upset about.
That's what I was going to ask you as well, as far as emails are concerned, is it best to put like the bill number in the subject line and maybe a no or a yes, or, you know, however?
Exactly.
Okay.
Just please vote no on 2025. And then
great.
Then go into all the details in the body of the email, but just for the title, no on 2025, just so that they can see that even if they don't read the whole email, and it's just their staffer, at least they're keeping track in the back of their mind of how many no's come through their email box versus yeses.
Okay. So getting back to HB 2025, I mentioned in that first segment there that there was a Republican plan to not have any new taxes and just force ODOT to reprioritize its spending. Why is it that Democrats seemed so obsessed with pushing not just a little money, but so much more money into ODOT? I mean, they are so obsessed with it, it makes you begin to wonder if there's something else going on there. Does it strike you as odd why they seem to be so obsessed with giving them so much money?
Oh, it's just another opportunity to grow government at the end of the day, grow union employees. I've harped on that a bunch, but the unions want more government employees because it means more union members for themselves. And so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think the reason why it's so egregious with the ODOT budget is because ODOT is a terribly run organization. They have no accountability, and they have so many employees that don't do anything. Like, they have a DEI and civil rights department that has like 20 people in it. There's tons of just waste, and the management level of ODOT is so overpaid. And yet again, ODOT's a terribly run organization and they're all still there. And so there's just so many opportunities to cut at ODOT, and there's huge budget overruns on almost every project. not just the I-5 bridge project, but almost all of them.
Yes.
And then when it comes to cutting ODOT, they just say, oh, well, we're going to cut the maintenance workers that actually maintain roads to make sure that taxpayers feel these cuts. When at the end of the day, the Republican plan and the common sense plan would be to cut all the overhead employees like HR, like civil rights, like DEI, all of these employees that get paid a ton of money and don't actually contribute to ODOT's core mission, which is obviously maintaining roads
yeah.
and transportation.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much money that even goes to TriMet that's in ODOT's budget that could be cut. Portland's a wealthy city. They could afford to pay more for TriMet themselves. Doesn't need to be a state subsidized agency or sub-agency.
Well, so, it's just not a good program if you're paying for it directly. It's always better when somebody else is paying for your bills there. You would think Portland would want to foot more of its own bills, but that's just never going to happen. Okay, let's take a break, come back, and continue our discussion about ODOT and what you need to know about the H3 2025 for the special session coming up this Friday. Welcome back. This is the iSpire Radio Show. Talking today to Representative Alex Garlatos. He's from House District 4, and that's in the southwest part of Oregon. He's an Oregon Army National Guard veteran and a small business owner as well. And so during the break there, we were talking, and you said that you have a specific example of ODOT mismanagement. So let's hear it.
Yeah, so I'm on the transportation subcommittee for Ways and Means, which means we get a look into the details of ODOT's budget. And one of the things that we saw was they had a bridge on the coast and they wanted to spend over $3 million just to study to see if the bridge would be feasible or not. $3 million just to think about whether they should put a bridge there or not. And also, it wasn't even a bridge for vehicles. It was a pedestrian and bicycle bridge. So that's a perfect example of ODOT just waste when they're asking the taxpayers for more money. And then on top of that, on the I-5 bridge project, they spent $70 million just to study whether they wanted to do tolling or not. And then just for the governor to decide that it was too politically too much of a hot potato. And so she decided not to even do it. So they wasted $70 million studying tolling just for them to decide that it was too politically volatile. So, I mean, they're going to do stuff like that and waste money on things like that and then ask the taxpayers, oh, by the way, we need more money because there's a $1 billion budget shortfall that we didn't account for.
Well,
I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, it is insane, but I can tell that you're a freshman representative here because it's never a waste if that spending goes to the right people. So $70 million to study tolling, as long as your side is getting the benefits of that study, that is not a waste, you know. It's insane.
Well, exactly. But I mean, just coming at it from someone with limited government experience and just seeing the amount of money that's wasted and no one's held accountable for it makes me want to pull my hair out, because if this was a private company, I mean, the CEOs would be indicted.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And there was a really interesting article that we'll probably get into in the next segment there. People ought to be indicted for this kind of stuff. So as far as ODOT is concerned and HB 2025, to me, it is not a funding problem. It's a spending problem. And I think that's really what the Republican plan had highlighted. And there was a great report by Willamette Week, and we'll link that up in today's webpage, and that is 15-34. For the show. And so the report by Willamette Week said that Oregon wants people to believe that ODOT's spending is practically at poverty levels, but an analysis found Oregon's road funding is comparable to other states, the seven Western states. You know, whether ODOT or schools or anything else in Oregon, the problem is that it just seems that there is never enough money. I mean, it seems like you could throw them $1 trillion in it and they would still complain there wasn't enough money.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's the case with every government organization. If they're doing great, it's because they're well-funded and they need more money to expand, and we should reward them for doing great. If they're doing poorly, it's because they don't have enough money to manage whatever they're supposed to do, and we need to throw them more money to fix it. The answer when you're talking to government agency heads is we always need more money. We always need to grow government. It's just insane. We should be punishing the agencies that aren't doing well.
Yes.
Even if you want to reward the agencies that are doing well, let them take over the failing agencies so that they can have some accountability. I mean, there's just no checks and balances in the state of Oregon because we're a one-party state, and the supermajority Democrats have no reason to look inward and blame themselves for anything because they run the whole show, and that would mean taking accountability themselves as Democrats, not just as government agencies.
Yes. Well, you mentioned the punishment and reward system. I think that's part of what's so screwed up here with government. In my MBA classes, I had a great accounting teacher, and he absolutely hated government spending. And he said a large problem with government spending is that it rewards failure in many ways, because you grow the budget as an agency head, and now that gives you a chance to move up the ladder because, hey, you grew a $1 billion agency into a $2 billion agency, as if that's a good thing. And instead, you need to punish people that are failing to meet budgets, failing, you know, for these overruns and everything else. Reward those that don't spend their entire budget.
I mean, exactly. And, you know, we see stuff like this federally as well. You know, we're so in debt as a country, like $37 trillion. I can't even keep track anymore. And all of our congressmen are paid well. And if we just incentivize them saying, hey, you don't get paid unless there's a balanced budget.
Exactly.
Or
yes.
Even double their pay for all I care. If you can balance the budget, we'll double your pay because an extra few million dollars going to congressmen is better than them doing insider trading.
Yes.
And if they can balance the budget so we're not increasing the debt by trillions of dollars, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, doesn't matter. We increase the budget regardless, whether it's state government or federal government. And one more talking point I want to bring up. If we just went back to 2001 levels of government in the state of Oregon, we would not have any taxes in the state of Oregon because the federal government would fund the entire state's budget.
Hmm.
We have tripled the amount of money coming into the state in about 25 years, and the one-third coming from the federal government would have been enough money to fund our 2001 level of government. And I think everyone in Oregon, whether it's Republican or Democrat, would be happy to go back to 2001 levels of government if it meant they paid zero taxes in the state.
Hmm. Well, that would be great if we could return like that. I don't see that happening in the near future. It might, though, if Republicans take over. This next question is going to take a little bit, so everyone sit with us. We'll continue with Alex Garlatos. He is the representative from House District 4. We're talking about ODOT and the special session coming up. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about HB 2025. There's a special session about that coming up this Friday. That is August 29th. And we're talking with Representative Alex Garlatos. He's from House District 4 down in Southwest Oregon. We were talking about budgets there, and it just seems like to me, and you know, the Democrats are pushing this massive tax increase for Oregonians, and it's going to affect everybody. And before it seems we have any new spending, it just seems like there ought to be a full and complete independent audit of not just the current spending, but historical spending as well, how they've done over the last few years. I mean, as it is, it seems like we're giving more alcohol to an alcoholic and somehow expecting them not to drink. We've got to have an intervention to break ODOT's chronic addiction problems to spending. Should that not be the next step before we're even talking about HB 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There should be accountability if we're going to send them more money, especially an increase, not just current service levels, but a huge increase. We shouldn't allow the same people to manage that money.
Yes.
Who got us in the hole.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say the entire C-suite of ODOT should have been fired over that. And again, zero accountability. So
yeah,
I just don't understand it. And even if I was a Democrat representative, I would say, okay, I'm a big spending Democrat. Let's give them more money, but I want the agency's CEO's head on a platter. Like, I want heads should roll. People should get fired and never work in Oregon state level government again if they're responsible for a $1 billion budget shortfall, an I-5 bridge project that goes hundreds of millions of dollars over budget. I mean, the amount of money that we spend on things like homelessness in this state is astronomical. If we just cut unnecessary programs that are outside the scope of state government, our taxes would probably be more than cut in half. I mean, it's just so frustrating as a Republican to see this kind of stuff and not really have very much power to do anything about it because we're in the super minority. So we need help on elections. We need to become the majority party in either the state house or the state senate, or get a governor in there who's Republican. But we need someone as just a backstop to hold Democrats accountable and balance the power a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Certainly we have to break this majority that we currently have. So as far as the audits are concerned, because I was a little surprised in doing some prep work for the show, you know, you hear about the Secretary of State doing all these audits and whatnot. But what's kind of surprising is that it's very rare that they have a whole agency audit. In fact, the last one of ODOT was back in 2017, so 8 years ago. And, you know, they will do these kind of, you know, targeted audits of specific programs and operations and compliance. The most recent one of ODOT was looking at the motor voter roll. Should audits not be a lot more routine than once every 8 years?
Well, absolutely, and especially if they're financials. And one of my favorite things, too, was my general government committee. We got to see the audit of the Secretary of State's office. And originally they said, oh, there's no illegal aliens on the voter rolls. It's impossible for us to register an illegal alien to vote.
Whoops.
Then come to find out, yes, there's illegal aliens registered to vote, but there's not that many. Oh, well, actually, there's a lot, but none of them actually voted. Okay, never mind. Some of them actually voted, yes, but not that many. Okay, never mind. Actually, a lot of them voted.
Yeah.
And so it's like they just keep admitting more and more guilt, but because it's not all released at once, it's a slow trickle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a major story.
Yeah,
and
people,
I mean, stuff like that should be, I mean, it should be a nationwide story across the country. I mean, we're the leading state for vote by mail, and the fact that we've bungled it so bad should be a warning sign for other states. And
yeah,
we should, I mean, I really do think we should go back to in-person voting. I'm not sure if this end vote by mail ballot initiative is going to go anywhere, frankly, even that really of a good idea, but I would like to see that decision come from the Trump administration or the Supreme Court instead.
Yeah, I would too. Well, you know, we've talked about that a number of times on the show here, is that mail-in ballots, you just can't trust them because there's no genuine chain of custody. You cannot verify that the person to which you sent that ballot actually filled out that ballot. And you know,
well, I think we can, we just don't. You probably could have vote by mail that was secure, but we just don't do that.
Well, what I'm referring to specifically is when it gets mailed to a home, you don't know if the son or daughter is filling it out for an aging grandparent. You don't know.
Exactly.
And so that's why I say you can't verify that ballot was filled out by that voter. That's why there is no question when somebody shows up in person to vote who filled out that ballot. They did because you saw it.
Well, and more egregiously, you know, you'll get two ballots, one with your name on it and one with your name spelled wrong.
Yes.
I mean, and if you filled out both of those ballots, you're telling me the Secretary of State's office, who is stupid enough to send you two ballots, is going to recognize that that's the same person. They're only going to count one. And which one do they count? The one with your name spelled correctly or the name with the name spelled wrong? Which one comes first or both or neither? Like there's no way to even find out what they would do because it's all theoretical. And the second there's an audit, we find out they're not following their own procedures anyway.
Yeah, it is absolutely insane. So this next bit is going to take a little bit more to deal with, so we will roll that over into the last segment. That is coming up next with Alex Scarlatos talking about HB 2025 and the special session coming up fast. And welcome back in our final segment now here on iSpy Radio, talking today to Alex Scarlatos. He's the representative from HD4 here in Oregon. And so, Alec, government efficiency when it comes to spending is not usually something that you hear about, especially when it comes to the federal government or state government. They have cost overruns all the time, and they just keep finding, you know, even though they find it, they never do anything about it. What the federal government does is Scrooge-like compared to what Oregon does. We don't ask any questions. We just hand out more money. And nowhere, I think, is that more true than ODOT, maybe the Oregon Health Authority, but certainly for ODOT. Back in my MBA days, Japan was a topic of frequent discussion because so much of their management style focused on efficiency, and not just business, but even government. And there are very few cost overruns over in Japan as far as government contracting, because the contractors are held to their initial bids, and the contractors, not the taxpayers, pay for any overages and cost overruns. Plus, the contractors can be fined for not delivering on time. It seems to me that ought to be the way to go here in Oregon, rather than not holding anyone responsible for not getting jobs done on budget and on time.
Yeah, I agree with that. The only problem, really, and why a lot of these projects take so long is government bureaucracy forces these projects that should be done in 6 months or a year. They go on for 5 or 6 years because, you know, you have to fill out all the paperwork. You have to hire union members. There's all these hoops we have to jump through. And then not only does the project itself increase organically, but, you know, if the last couple of years we've had massive amounts of inflation, which also increase the cost of these projects. And so, yeah, I agree paying the contractor and having them be on the hook with a bid would be ideal. Unfortunately, government just doesn't move fast enough for that to be a practical solution in Oregon. If we could cut a lot of red tape, I mean, I think that would be the best of both worlds so that they could get everything done on time and then also be able to do it on a bid process.
Yeah. Well, there is a bridge, the Abernathy Bridge, up in the Portland metro area. It's currently $600 million over budget. The initial cost, they were lawmakers were told it would be about $200 million. It's currently coming in at $800 million. And so I asked X's AI, Grok, would that ever happen in Japan? And what would be the penalties be if it did happen? And in short, he said it would be highly unlikely, because there are rigorous pre-bidding and cost estimation in effect. There is cultural and contractual discipline, because Japan's construction industry emphasizes precision and accountability driven by cultural norms and the competitive pressures. And he said this: if a contractor's mismanagement caused a $600 million overrun, the contractor would cover the excess costs, potentially leading to a significant financial strain or even bankruptcy for smaller firms. Larger firms might instead absorb the losses to maintain their reputation. If the contractor cannot complete the project within its bid, the government could terminate the contract, seize performance bonds, typically 10% of the contract value, and rebid the project, leaving the original contractor liable for losses. There would also be penalties for delay. Contracts often include clauses for daily or milestone-based penalties. For a project like Abernathy, a 10-month delay, that's 370 days past at this point, would receive a penalty rate of 0.1% of the contract value per day, which is the common benchmark there in Japan. So that's a $248 million project. They would be getting a fine of $250,000 per day, totaling so far $76 million. That would provide a little bit of incentive for these contractors to actually not just throw a bid out there, but actually throw out a bid that they can actually perform on time and on budget.
Yeah, I would agree with that in theory, but I also don't even want to put the blame on the contractors. It's not their fault that this project is over time and over budget. It's ODOT's fault. They're the ones that award these contracts. They're the ones that
force us to hire
union employees.
Well, does ODOT not ask the right questions when it comes to these kinds of bidding procedures? Do we need to reexamine the whole bidding process?
Well, again, I think that wouldn't hurt to look at, but it's not really the contractor's fault. It's really ODOT's fault. They're the ones that are responsible for the delays, not the contractor. The contractor can say, yeah, it'll be this much if I start next month. And then ODOT will say, okay, well, what if you start 2 years from now?
Right.
And they'll say, well, I don't really know because inflation and all these other factors. And then 2 years later, ODOT will come back to that contractor and say, okay, now we're actually ready for you to start. How much money is it now? And then they're shocked when the bid has gone up by 50% because they waited 18 months or 2 years to move forward and execute that bid. It's not the contractor's fault. And I think there's a lot of ways that we could make the bid process in Oregon more competitive and allow non-union people to bid on projects and, you know, maybe have time penalties or benefits for the contractor themselves. But again, it's not their fault in the state of Oregon. It's all ODOT. And I don't want to paint them as a boogeyman unnecessarily, but that's true.
Well, in Japan, for contractors who don't get things done on time and on budget, in addition to the penalties, they risk being blacklisted or downgraded in pre-qualification rankings, which could severely limit their future contracts. In the cases in Oregon where it is the contractor's fault, do they ever get blacklisted or any kind of, you know, ding on their reputation that maybe they wouldn't get the contract next time?
Certainly not. And again, the problem too is they're all union members. And so that narrows the pool of people you're even allowed to hire to begin with. And so you could only blacklist a few of them before you run out of union shop houses that can even do the work. So Oregon just makes it that much harder on that way. But I think we should start blacklisting government employees who mismanage agencies, and they should be fired and never hired anywhere else by the state of Oregon.
Even
any other state for that matter.
Yes, I absolutely love that. I've said things like that for a long time now. So real quick, we only got about 30 seconds here with you. If you had to guess, how do you think HB 2025 will fare in this special session?
I think it'll pass. It'll be too embarrassing for them to have it fail twice and once during a special session. They'll find the votes one way or another if they have to bribe the moderate Dems or even some of the softer Republicans to vote yes, they will. And at the end of the day, I think it'll cross the finish line as much as we want to protest or stop it.
Well, I think if we can get all of the Republicans to hang together, we just might, in fact, defeat that. So I'm going to hold out hope that maybe if people get in there, make their voices heard, that'll turn things around. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock with you. Alex Carlatos, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Check out today's show page on ispyradio.com/15-34. And down in the show notes page, we'll have some links that you can use to send your input to your legislators, representatives, and senators. I certainly hope that Alec is wrong, that this will not pass. But there's that problem that Democrats tend to stay together even when headed in the wrong direction. Just look at what's happening nationally, where they are on the wrong side of every issue. And if this does pass, make sure it only passes because every Democrat voted for it. You heard Alec. There are Democrats in swing districts that are terrified about this. And that's why you need to hold every single Republican's feet to the fire to make sure they don't cross the line to allow it to pass. Kevin Mannix was squishy last time, and it looks like Representative Giovanni is squishy this time. There is still time to sway them back to the right side. And if you had to send one message to your representatives, besides no, it's that you demand some accountability before any more money is given away. HB 2025 should not pass until there is a full and complete audit of current and past spending in ODOT. But whatever you do, don't remain silent. Will it pass? Well, it's like Reagan is about to say.
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.